This is The Side Hustle Show with Nick Loper, episode 46, blogging in your spare time from $0 to $17,000 a month.
Welcome to The Side Hustle Show, where aspiring part-time entrepreneurs learn how to turn their side hustle dreams into reality. Because your 9-to-5 may make you a living, but your 5-to-9 makes you alive. And now, your host, Nick Loper.
Hey everybody, Nick Loper here. Welcome to The Side Hustle Show. This is episode 46, and it's going to be a good one, man. I've got Bjork and Lindsay here from pinchofyum.com and also foodbloggerpro.com. I met Bjork really briefly at Affiliate Summit this winter. He stopped by my little Q&A session on outsourcing, and after the show, when I went to follow up with this guy, I found this business and this blog that he and his wife are running and was crazy impressed. Another huge real-life side hustle success story. Plus, they're adorable high school sweethearts just like Britt and I. So let's get right into it with Bjork and Lindsay from pinchofyum.com. Hey, Lindsay and Bjork, welcome to The Side Hustle Show.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for having us.
Hey, Nick. We're happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
Awesome. I'm excited for this one. You guys are the founders of the beautiful and hugely popular Pinch of Yum blog, as well as the spinoff. I don't know if we can call it a spinoff. The sure. Food Blogger Pro, kind of a membership and training website for other bloggers. And the cool thing is both these businesses started as side hustles, and I guess they really still are side hustles. So let's talk about the Pinch of Yum blog. Now, when did this start? Tell me about like the origin story of this blog.
Yeah, well, I've always enjoyed cooking, and I grew up in a family that really enjoyed food. So that's always been something that I've been interested in. But I don't have like a formal culinary background or anything. It just kind of started out as a hobby thing. When Bjork and I first got married, which was 4 years ago, I was making a lot more food than I had before, just because I was cooking for the both of us.
Okay.
And looking online for recipes and kind of like getting introduced to the whole concept of a food blog. And anyways, I kind of jokingly suggested one day, maybe I should start a blog because I'm, you know, trying all these new recipes and whatever. And Bjork was, I was kind of kidding about it. But Bjork said, no, I think you really should. And I'll get you set up with a free page, we started with a Tumblr page.
Okay.
And so, or like a Tumblr site, I guess you would say. And so I started blogging there, and then, that would have been, we're coming up on 4 years in April. So that would have been like, 2010?
Okay. Happy anniversary.
So, yeah. Thanks.
Blog-iversary.
Yes, yeah, yeah. That's what they call it.
One thing too that I think that I'll chime in here that I think is important is Lindsay mentioned we started out on Tumblr. And I think it's important for people to know like the progression of a blog. And as people are thinking about getting into it, and I'm guessing for your audience, Nick, there are entrepreneurs, people that are into it. And then there's probably also a subset that are like wantrepreneurs, that are people that are interested in or kind of playing around with this idea of like, what is my side hustle going to be?
Definitely.
And for us, it was like, we had no clue about anything related to anything online. and I remember some of the first posts that Lindsay would do, she would take pictures and then she would put them in a post and then publish that. And then there'd be like literally, there'd be a sentence down below that says recipe to follow, and then would go and publish another post that would have the recipe in it.
Okay.
Because we didn't know how to put them together. Like that's the point that we were at. And so I would encourage the people that are listening, that are thinking about it to not wait until they feel like they fully understand everything and to jump in. And I might be getting ahead of myself a little bit, but I think that's an important part of the story is for us, like just how much of beginners we were. And in some ways, you know, we still are, but you don't get to the place where you feel confident pressing publish by like learning a bunch and then doing it. It's like, you jump in and do it, and through the process you learn. And for us, that was really, really true. So I think that's an important part of our story.
I really like that. Learn by doing, kind of this
yeah, for sure.
This mentality, yeah, of, hey, I'm going to put it out there, see what happens. Now, at what point did you make the switch from Tumblr to your own domain?
Yeah, that was about a year in, Lindsay, is that right?
Yeah, I don't really remember, I guess, specifically because you were more involved with that. But yeah, probably after about a year.
Okay. I think it was at the point where we realized, like, hey, this is something that we want to actually try and figure out and something that we want to try and do really well. And I think it was also at the point where we realized, or I felt like there might be people that are Tumblr fanatics that might disagree, but like, I feel like Tumblr is a little bit better for like short format stuff, like, you know, sharing pictures or, not so much like super long format stuff with recipes. And there's just so much, especially for a food blog, that you can do within WordPress, like recipe plugins that do certain formatting and stuff. So it was kind of as we, you know, learned what's out there and what's available and looked at other blogs that were doing really well, food blogs that were doing really well, and kind of reverse engineered what they were doing. And we said, hey, a lot of these people are on WordPress. That's probably not just by chance. So we switched over. So
yeah, I saw some stat the other day. It was like, you know, one out of six, like, of every website on the planet is running WordPress right now. It's just,
yeah,
they're taking over the world and for good reason. Like it's good software.
Yep. Absolutely.
So previously it was like pinchofyum.tumblr.com and then,
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then it was,
and now it's just pinchofyum.com, just the straight URL. So.
Yeah, that's better. It's better for branding and stuff. It's worthwhile to make that investment.
And if anybody wants to, maybe I'm opening the door here, Lindsay, I don't know. But the site is still there. All the old posts and stuff, like all the archives, things that we didn't bring over to the new site, all of that stuff is there. So if anybody wants to go back and look, you can literally go back and see like the first posts ever on Pinch of Yum.
Was the Tumblr site starting to get a bunch of traffic, a bunch of traction? Is that kind of what prompted the, hey, this could be a serious thing. Maybe it's time to invest in the domain, invest in the hosting and make this happen?
I think it was, and you can weigh in here, Lindsay, if you remember back, but I think it was more of like frustrations with capability and less about like this huge audience. That wasn't quite at the point where there's this huge following. It was more of like, hey, we really want to do this stuff and we don't feel like we can. And there's probably ways that we could have, but it's just like, there's so much out there because there's, you know, 1 in 6 or whatever the stat was, sites that are running on WordPress. There's just so much more out there and available for it. So it was just easier to do what we needed to do. So that was the reason for the switch.
What do you think made Pinch of Yum kind of stand out? There's obviously a million and one food blogs. It's one of those universal subjects that everybody, you know, feels strongly about because everyone loves to eat. And, you know, what do you think was kind of the catalyst for making the site take off the way it did?
You know, I think like in the beginning, there was really nothing that made it stand out. I was, as I'm trying to think through the different, you know, elements that make it unique. Especially in the beginning, I think it was pretty average. But as I started to learn more about, how to take better pictures, that started to bring more people in. And I think as I started to get more people, then I started to really pay attention to, you know, posting good recipes and posting consistently and trying to make it a connection with my audience. And I think now there are things that make it unique. Like we share, you know, in the income reports, the monthly income reports on the blog. And we also have, I've done a couple posts on food photography and have self-published an ebook on food photography. So a lot of the blog has kind of become teaching others about food blogging. But that really didn't exist from the beginning. And I think really the formula for, I mean, quote unquote success in the beginning was just doing it day after day after day and just, you know, posting and putting content out there and hopefully good content most of the time. and just kind of letting it grow naturally, I guess. I don't know. That's not really a good answer to your question, but I guess the bottom line or the takeaway is like, there's really nothing about it. It's not even super niche when it comes to food. Like, it's not gluten-free or it's not, you know, any of the, there are so many sites like that now that can market to a really niche, not just the food audience, but a really niche audience within the food community. And it doesn't have that. So I think a lot of that, you know, a lot of that growth can just come from the consistency and consistently posting good content, I guess, over time.
It's become the food blogger's food blog, you know. It's not just recipes for, you know, people like looking it up in their kitchen. It's like, oh, I want to do what these guys are doing, you know, and kind of the behind the scenes stuff of that. And like what you say, like there's no, I mean, when you say it's not a good answer, of course it's a good answer if it's the truth. Like, hey, we were just, they're busting our butts publishing every day, hopefully good content. And over time, you know, that body of work kind of rises to the top. And that's the thing with blogging in particular, is it's easy to start a blog and you can do it for free, or you could, you know, set up your own hosting and stuff. The harder part is kind of keeping going after those 6 months, mm-hmm. where the only people reading it are you and your mom. And and it's just, it can be frustrating. Like, it feels like you're talking into a vacuum. So my next question was kind of like, you know, if there was any like big win that really like opened up the floodgates, or like a big spike in traffic or some press exposure, but it sounds like it was kind of just a slow iterative process.
Well, the funny thing is that there was kind of a moment in time that, I don't know, I guess spiked things a little bit. But the funny thing about it is that we really didn't even know about it until, what, Bjork, like a year later?
Yeah, that's probably about right.
But Bjork, maybe you can explain it a little bit better.
It actually came from a question from somebody on a post, and they said, at what point do you feel, or no, they had asked, I think I had posted a screenshot of the traffic that we had. And somebody asked, what is that spike in March? I think it was in March.
Okay.
And I didn't know. I had no idea.
So go dig into it.
Yeah. So I looked into it, and it was from a pin from somebody named Jane Wang. And I had no idea who that was. And her Pinterest profile picture was like a penguin.
Okay.
So, which didn't help at all. But then I looked into it, and at the time she was one of, and maybe still is, I don't know, was one of the most popular, people on Pinterest. And she's the daughter, or she's the mother of the founder of Pinterest. Whatever reason, she became one of the most popular people. I don't know if it was like somebody that was like a suggested profile to follow or what her story is, but she had pinned a recipe on Pinch of Yum. And just the way that Pinterest works, like once it's pushed into the kind of Pinterest stream, that kind of created, you know, a kind of a viralness to this, this certain post. And like a lot of blogs, you know, there's a plateau, and then there's a jump, and then there's another plateau, and then there's a jump. At least that's what it's been for Pinch of Yum. And that was one of the times when there's a jump. And then it plateaued a little bit, but that was kind of the initial time when it went from like, you know, a couple hundred people to a day or whatever it was to like thousands. So that was the first time where we jumped into decent numbers. And I think a really definitive point where we can say at that point, it became like, okay, we can see the potential for earning an income from a blog. Whereas before it was like, hey, that's kind of cool. There's a few hundred or maybe 1,000 people that are visiting every day, but this kind of pushed it over into a new level.
Yeah. Some big traffic numbers. So at that point, was that when you started putting ads on the site? I'm curious how the monetization work. And just for people listening, they are very public with their income reports. And at the time of this recording, we're looking at over $17,000 in January of 2014. So it's pretty serious side hustle income here.
Yeah. Yep.
But talk to me about the monetization strategy that's on the site.
Yeah. So, that first report that we did was in September of 2011. It wasn't so much of like, hey, now we can start monetizing. It was more of like, I wonder if this is possible. And there's kind of two conflicting ideas or beliefs that I had heard. There's a couple posts that I had heard or read from people that were in the food blog industry, and they're like, it's impossible to create an income from a food blog, and here's why. And then there's also the people like Gary Vaynerchuk on the other side, who I was kind of familiar with, even though I didn't have a blog or wasn't doing any type of like online business, but just interested in what he had to say, and just an interesting personality to listen to. Mm-hmm. And he was on the other side saying, hey, you can, you know, if you've ever read Crush It, or if you remember that book, he gives an example of like, hey, if you are really into fishing and specifically really into worms, like you can create a worm blog and then monetize that. So I feel like there, for me, it was these two conflicting ideas. And Lindsay was starting to get some initial success, or at least what we thought was like, hey, there's, you know, a good number of people that are visiting the blog. And so, you know, we kind of had this time where I was like, hey, what do you think about trying to create an income from this thing? And kind of testing out and seeing which one of these things, you know, which one of these concepts is true. And we're both, I think we're both all in on it. And then we jumped in and started doing it. So we called it the, you know, those first ones, we called it the food blog money making experiment. Like, hey, let's experiment with this and see what it's like. And we just really had no clue what we were doing. So we were experimenting.
We started out with $21.97 in August 2011. So a little over a year after launching, you guys earned enough to go out to a cheap, you know, burrito dinner or something.
Yes. Yep. Right. Yep.
All the way up to 70,000 last month. Pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's, just so the people that are listening know, like, it's this combination of like tinkering and figuring out what works, and also the dedication of like consistently posting. So, it's not like we learned these like incredible, crazy, you know, internet marketing things. It was small changes, small adjustments, small improvements, along with like continually increasing traffic. And as anybody that's listening knows, that's kind of like the ultimate combination of like increasing traffic while increasing the effectiveness of your blog, whether that be like conversion rate or you know, CPM of ad networks or products or things like that. So
right. So did you start off with some display advertising or AdSense or, you know, affiliate stuff, or what did you guys start off with?
We started out with like a food blog specific advertising company when we first got started. And it was, you know, they didn't have very strict requirements for getting accepted. So it's not like we had to have, you know, 500,000 page views or something a month. And that was called Foodie Blog Roll. And I'm not super familiar right now, but I think Foodie Blog Roll is still around and available. Okay. And then, you know, and as we think back to it, I remember being like, we're going to add an ad to Pinch of Yum. And it felt like, no, like we're selling out. It just felt like the biggest change. I don't know if you remember.
After working for a year and a half, for completely for free.
And everybody's going to leave, and, you know, we're going to get hate emails. And then, so we added that. And then eventually we added another one. I think it was an AdSense ad where we saw, hey, some people are doing AdSense. And again, it felt like, this is a huge, huge change. We have two ads now. But over time, we've just kind of slowly tinkered and adjusted. And now we're using an ad network called BlogHer, which is specific to women-oriented blogs. And then we backfill and then also have some ads from Legit, which is now, it was acquired by Federated Media, and then it was acquired again by a company called Sovereign, and then AdSense as well. So, yeah.
And are you selling, like, I mean, is there like a personal branded Pinch of Yum food book, or I'm sorry, a cookbook, or kind of, did you guys start creating your own products?
Yeah. You want to talk about that, Linz?
Yeah. So what year was it? Was that end of 2012 that I did Tasty Food Photography?
That sounds right.
Must have been. I think it was. Anyways, so it would have been a little, almost 2 years ago, that I decided, okay, I'm gonna write an ebook. And at the time I had wanted to do a cookbook or an e-cookbook, I guess. But through a number of different, you know, factors, I ended up changing my mind and deciding to go the route of more of a how-to for food photography, and kind of like a beginner's guide. And it was geared towards food bloggers. And so that was the first Pinch of Yum product. And it's just an ebook, it's like 60 pages PDF file, and then access to some tutorial videos on the site as well. But that's been really fun. It's been one of the more surprising parts of the blog, just because I really had no idea what to expect from that. And I'm not like an expert at food photography, but being self-taught and having kind of come from being really bad to being decent with photography, I feel like it provided a nice way for me to be able to, I don't know, walk other people through that process as well. And it's just been really fun to see the response on that. So that was the first product. And then I did an update to that, last year. So it's, continuing to sell pretty well. And then
what's the price point on that?
Oh yeah. $19 is what we have it at right now.
Okay.
And then this fall, I put out my first e-cookbook, and then that is, actually it's a kind of a expansion of a collection of recipes that use this creamy cauliflower sauce that had been a post that I had done, a few months earlier that had done really well on Pinterest. It had, you know, a bunch of shares and a bunch of comments, and a lot of people were really enjoying this creamy cauliflower sauce. So I ended up doing a collection of recipes, got a little sick of the creamy cauliflower sauce, but I did 30 recipes with creamy cauliflower sauce, and that, we are also selling on the blog now, and it's what is it? $9, Bjork?
Yep.
So those are the two, Pinch of Yum products, I guess, that we're selling now. And right now I'm actually wrapping up another, e-cookbook. So, definitely trying to keep the momentum going with adding products and, I don't know, constantly reevaluating what makes them valuable and how to price them and how to, I don't know, encourage other people to share them if they're useful and that kind of a thing.
Definitely. And so what's been the pushback? Like you said, you were afraid of putting the ads on the site. There's going to be a revolt. There's going to be a mutiny. So what ended up happening?
Specific to the ads?
Yeah.
I think that with everything that we've done, I think there's the reality of like, or with just creating a business or a blog in general, there's this kind of weird reality in that like everything is significant and at the same time, nobody cares. So like with the ads, like we put ads on there and really like nobody really cares. It's not like people are going to, you know, it's going to affect their day to day.
Right.
Like the significance of it is pretty small, but at the same time, there's this other side where it's like, and at the same time, everything matters in the sense that it affects how the blog looks. It affects the performance of it. Like it loads a lot slower because of it. And in general, like degrades the brand a little bit. So it's almost like, I think people notice it, but I think like the subliminal, cost is greater than like the blowback cost.
Okay.
Which pushes the decision for people with a blog into less about like the fear of doing something like putting ads on your site or doing a sponsored post, and more into the realm of like, how is this going to affect my brand? Not in a way that people are going to be mad at me, but in a way that maybe people aren't going to interact or be as engaged or be as, you know, stay as long on the blog because of it. So I think there wasn't any, like, obviously any people emailing and saying, oh my gosh, you put up ads, you shouldn't do that.
I see that some of the time on like the sites that I get asked to review, you know, it's this personal blog that has, you know, a few hundred visitors a month. Like it's just starting out, and then they'll have AdSense, you know, on the sidebar. And it's like, you know, is the 50 cents you're going to make from this, like, yeah, is that worth like selling out your kind of like fledgling audience? Like, is it, you know, there's trade-offs. Is it worth it?
Yeah. Yep. And I think that that becomes increasingly harder as you get bigger numbers. So like I was just having this conversation with somebody this morning, and trying to weigh the positives and negatives. And especially when you get into like January, February, March, like ad networks in general perform so poorly in the first quarter, that especially for a blog that's getting smaller numbers, but even when you get into higher numbers, you start to weigh the positives and negatives. And I think our long-term hope would be to remove ads completely. But it becomes a difficult decision when you're weighing, you know, it's not like $100 a year, it's like, you know, $50,000 to $70,000 a year.
It's big money. So in terms of like the breakdown, what percentage would you say is coming from advertising and what percentage is coming from sales of your guys' own products?
Yeah. So it depends on the time of the year. And it shifts higher to advertising in the third and fourth quarter, just because of how, you know, ads work and companies need to spend through their ad budget in the fourth quarter so then they spend more. And ad networks then can charge more. And, you know, it's a classic kind of supply and demand.
I had no idea.
So in the first quarter, in general, at least at this point, products and affiliate marketing is our best performing segment. But usually third and fourth quarter, at least in the last couple of years, that's been advertising. But I'm not like an advertising expert, but I feel like more and more, just because there's so much good content out there and people are using the web more, that in general, banner advertising is going to become less and less effective and less of a return on the investment. So our hope, I think long-term would be to move away from it. But at this point, I think we'll probably stick with it just because there is still a very obvious return on it. But there's obviously a negative side as well.
Right. So I wanted to go back. You guys mentioned how you're huge on Pinterest. I was looking at one of your reports and it was like 500,000 visits or something referred from Pinterest last month. Just insane numbers. Like aside from getting pinned by the founders, mom, are there any like specific tips or tactics that people can use to boost up their exposure or their presence there?
I think the biggest thing, the biggest thing for me that maybe is noteworthy is that I didn't even use Pinterest I didn't have my own account on Pinterest until 6 months ago, maybe.
Okay, wow.
And so all of that traffic and I was getting quite a bit of traffic from Pinterest, even like me joining and having the account as of 6 months ago really didn't change anything about how much Pinterest traffic I'm getting. So I think a lot of that comes back down to focusing on visuals and focusing on ways that you can engage people through kind of through photos or through whatever is, graphics or something that's pinnable, that's shareable, that's quick to consume. You can look at it and understand it right away. And I think that part of the reason for all that traffic coming from Pinterest is because of the visuals, and not that like, oh, I have the greatest photos, you know, because there are tons of great food photos on Pinterest.
Well, I think give yourself some credit. The pictures are beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. But you know, I just feel like when you can showcase what you're trying to communicate in a really clear, nice way, and it's quick for people to look at and then save or pin or share with whoever. I just think that's a really big thing. And obviously it's been big for us even without my participation in Pinterest. I don't know. It's been kind of an interesting experience because a lot of people ask, oh, well, you know, what are you doing on Pinterest to get all that traffic? And it's nothing. I haven't done really anything.
Let somebody else do the work for you. I mean, I think the ultimate testament of, you know, having built a valuable resource that other people are linking to it and pinning that stuff, you know, without even your involvement. That's really cool.
Yes. Yeah. It's been really cool.
I think it's a hard thing to understand too, because there's such a huge push for social media, because I think it's important. And I think at the core of what it is like this desire and this need to connect with people, which is a really good thing. But I think sometimes people can get distracted by it and think that that is the thing, like building a social media profile on Facebook or Pinterest or Twitter. And I think that I'm listening to a Seth Godin book right now called Poke the Box. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but it's this great, like, it's actually the audio book that I'm listening to, and it's this great 2.5-hour audio book or something like that.
Okay.
But in it, he talks about polishing. And I think that sometimes people can be continually polishing as opposed to building. And I think it's important for like people that are doing a side hustle to occasionally polish, but continually build. Just because when you build something, that's what people come to, whether it's content, a video, a site, like that's the core of what it is. And then once you've built it, spend time occasionally polishing that, but don't continually polish something that you've built.
I'm so guilty of this. Like, I'll just, you know, stand there and like try and tweak the stupid thing in the sidebar and be like, oh, you just want it to be like 5 pixels higher. You know, why doesn't it look right? And it's like,
you and I both.
It doesn't matter at all. Like, you know, it's just like, you know, the whole ship it. And, you know, one of my quotes that I have a hard time sticking to sometimes is, you know, perfection is the enemy of good enough. And just like, get it out the door. It's fine. You know, if you could fix it later, go work on something that's actually going to, you know, make a difference in life.
Yep. And I think that's really, really hard to do because in general, people like things to be done really well, which is a strength and it's a good thing, but it can also hold you back because, you know, you're scheduling out pins for 3 hours of your day. When in reality, like it's creating an awesome post that, you know, or a recipe or a food photo that people will come to and pin, as opposed to like you trying to push your content in front of people, it's creating stuff that people come to. So I think, yeah,
definitely.
That's a good point.
So, so Lindsay, you mentioned you were a teacher, elementary school teacher. Yeah. I want to talk on, you know, this is the Side Hustle show. So I want to talk a little bit about kind of the time management and the game plan, how to get all this stuff done in, you know, while still working a day job.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of been a constant, I don't want to say struggle, but you know, it's a struggle. Anybody who works more than one job, can probably attest to that. But, I think the biggest thing for me, has just been trying to be really intentional with my time. So, we've had a couple of things to our advantage over the last few years, in terms of the side hustle kind of mentality and schedule. But one thing is, we were just talking about this, we actually have lived most of our married life together without a TV. And we just now, the funny thing is, we just got a TV like a couple days ago. So I'm now sitting right next to this big TV in our living room. But
you survived so long without it, you know?
Right. And a PS4. You forgot to mention that, which is a really important element of the purchase.
All right. No more blogging is ever going to get done now.
Right.
Which, speaking of polishing, I'm going to be polishing my Madden skills over the next few months. So.
Boy. No, but I think that like just really cutting out distractions has been a big thing. So like that, just like TV watching and whatever, it just hasn't really been a part of our lives. And that not to say that that's the only thing, but you know, like another thing is we don't have kids yet. And a lot of our friends have kids and they're like, well, how can you do that? And we have a lot of things in our lives that set us up to have that free time. And I think the fact that both of us have things, has made the second job thing a little bit easier. So where we both come home, we both, you know, have dinner and then we both work again in the evening. So it's kind of like our time spent together sometimes is just time working, you know, time at home, time working. But definitely a lot of weekends, a lot of weeknight evening, work happening. But I think the thing about, a side hustle, or if you have a side thing, is that if you're really excited about it and you're seeing some cool things happen, it doesn't feel it's work and it takes a lot of work, but it's not like I come home and I'm like, oh, now I have to do this. It's like, I can't wait all day to get home. You know, I love teaching, but I love getting home and being able to, you know, have the freedom to do what I want to do, kind of in those off hours, if that makes sense.
Do you see yourself eventually quitting the teaching job and doing this full time? I mean, the income's obviously already there.
Right. It's definitely something we've talked about for a long time. And this would have been, you know, this year it was a decision too about going back, just because the income now is at the point where it pretty far surpasses my teaching income. which, you know, it's not really a secret to anybody. So, but, you know, teaching, and I think both of our jobs, but for me, teaching, it's a part of my identity, and, it's something that I believe in and that I think is really important. So yeah, it's definitely something we talk about. And I think that in general, that's the direction that we're heading. I don't see myself, you know, now I'm part-time and I don't see myself adding more hours. If anything, you know, it would be moving away from that and moving more towards doing the blog full time for sure. I feel like we're definitely at a point where that makes sense. That makes sense. So, okay. Yeah.
Very, very cool. And you, Bjork, you mentioned earlier kind of all the stuff you guys do to give back and how the income from the site, you know, that gets people's attention, but it also allows you guys to do some things. I think I was reading about, you know, is it in the Philippines, your charity work and stuff like that?
Yeah. So last year, Lindsay and I spent a year in the Philippines. So there's a orphanage called the Children's Shelter of Cebu. And we spent a year there. Lindsay was teaching and then I was volunteering and then working as well. And we've, you know, I'm on the board of this organization now. So we've been able to stay connected after we've come back from that. But in a lot of ways, like there's a piece of our hearts that is still in Cebu, that's still with the kids there at the orphanage. So I think that it's cool that we're able to give back financially, in a way with some of the income, but I think maybe more importantly for us, like we're just able to connect other people, with the work that's happening there. And I think that people want to be connected to good things, and it's just a really good thing that they're doing there. And the people that are involved, and we saw that being there for a year, just the insane amount of work that these people put in, and how much they love these kids that they take care of. At any point, there's like 80 to 90 kids that are there. And they just do a really, really good job. I think we're excited because of the voice that the blog has, that we're able to occasionally use a piece of that voice to direct people. And you know, whether it's on the Side Hustle podcast or in a income report or, you know, in a blog post, like we're able to direct some attention to that, which is a cool thing. And we're honored to be able to do that. And
yeah, what a cool experience that, you know, to be able to take a year and head over there.
Yeah, it was awesome. And it worked out really well in that Lindsay was able to come back and work at the same school that she was at, and she didn't get like an official leave, but you know, her principal was really cool about being like, hey, we want to do whatever we can to hire you back when you guys get back here. And I was able to stay plugged in with the nonprofit that I work with and do some remote work while I was there.
Okay.
So it was, we just felt like it was a really cool experience, and I think changed our perspective on how we view the world and how we process, you know, life in general. So we feel really blessed.
No, I think so too. No, that's very cool. I wanted to touch on the Food Blogger Pro business as like a, mm-hmm. as like we said, a spinoff or side business of the side business. This is up to 400 and something members at $25 a month. This is a 5-figure monthly business all on its own. So how did this thing get started? What's it all about?
Yep. And just so it doesn't seem like it's a bigger success than it is. So part of those are people that have purchased a 1-year membership or purchased like on Thanksgiving to Cyber Monday. We did like a half off 1-year membership. So in terms of like the recurring element, it probably at this point ends up being anywhere from 4,000 to 6,000. And then there's also occasional sales that we'll do throughout the year on a 1-year membership. So the recurring element is probably on average 5,000.
Sure, I'll take it. I'll take it.
Yep. Okay. Yep. And then there's, you know, certain peaks where we'll do a sale. Like we did a Thanksgiving, like I said, Thanksgiving to Cyber Monday sale, and there's like $11,000 in memberships there at half off. So there's kind of, it ebbs and flows, but right now there's, 430 people that are signed up to be part of Food Blogger Pro. And that really came from us getting email after email as we started to do these monthly reports and say, here's what we're doing to build a blog. And then people would email and say, so how do I start a blog? What do I do? How do you do this? How do you do that? And there was so much of that that eventually we came to a point where we're like, there's a really obvious need for a site that's just dedicated to food blogs. And one thing that we learned with Tasty Food Photography is like, we thought that, hey, we're going to, you know, Lindsay's going to write this book on food photography. We're going to publish it. And then 200 people are going to buy it. And then the market's going to be dry. Like, there's not going to be anybody else interested in food photography. But what you realize is that there's, you know, 10 billion people in the world. And even if it's only 0.001% of those people that are interested in food photography, that's still a huge number. And so we learned from that and said, hey, what would it be like to create a really niche site around food blogs and teach people how to build and start and grow a food blog, knowing that even though it seemed like there wouldn't be very many people, there actually probably is a decent amount of people that want to do that. So we actually built and launched that while we were in the Philippines.
Okay.
Which as I look back, I would say that was probably my biggest regret from the year, was because of how intense that was to go through that process. It took me away from the experience of living in the Philippines, which is a whole nother story, not for the whole year, but definitely for this like 3 month period while we were building it. But what we did is we did a pre-sale on it and people signed up, and paid anywhere from $49 to, I think it was $129. And then we used that money to invest in the site to build it. And that's actually built on Expression Engine. So that's not a WordPress site. Expression Engine is another content management system, very similar to WordPress, but, it's a paid for content management system.
Okay. We'll link to that in the show notes for sure.
Yep. Yep. And so what was great about the process is that when we launched, we had an automatic built-in group of people that were already going to be members. And for me, it provided a really hard deadline where it was like, we got to get this out the door on February 1st. So it was February 1st, 2013.
Okay.
And from there, we've switched then into the recurring revenue model, where it's $25 a month to sign up, or it's $125 when you do that once a year sale, or $250 for the year.
You sold some like charter lifetime memberships for people on pre-sale.
Yeah, and they weren't even lifetime. They were 1 year membership.
Okay.
Discounted 1 year membership.
Okay,
yep.
Okay.
Yep. But it's been a really, really good process and a huge learning curve just to go through that. It's occasionally discouraging because we'll have, you know, like Lindsay's ebook that, you know, last month was a kind of an outlier month, but it made like $7,000. And in some ways you don't really have to touch that. It's just a system that exists. And, you know, we use eJunkie and they deliver the book and they collect the payment and the payment is deposited in PayPal. And with Food Blogger Pro, it's a really time intensive thing for me, which I'm okay with. But I think it's been something that we've had to grapple with as we've had to switch back into like the growth stage of a site. Whereas Pinch of Yum is at this stage where like, hey, we can create something and automatically it can be successful just because of the numbers of people that are involved. With Food Blogger Pro, we're still kind of in like the startup stage with it, which is really fun, but also challenging in the sense that we need to continually be aware of.
What's the value proposition for it? What do people get when they sign up?
Yeah. So when people sign up right now, there's two main elements. It's videos. So we have over 300 videos now.
Oh, wow.
And those are
like cooking show videos or like what kind of videos do you have?
So those are like screencasts of, you know, deep dives into plugins. So there's like Easy Recipe is a plugin that food bloggers can use to format their recipes so they look good, but also so they're formatted with SEO. You know, so they'll show up in Google as recipe search results. So there's screencasts and there's also like food shoots. So Lindsay will go through essentially start to end of a food shoot and say, here's the process that I use. So it's kind of demonstration videos, it's screencasts, things that help people start and grow their food blog, essentially.
Okay.
And then the other element is a community forum. So that's just getting to the point now where it's getting really active. There's multiple people posting on there a day, asking questions, getting feedback, and also connecting, which is a huge part as you're growing a blog. It's like, man, it can get really lonely when you're sitting in your dining room by yourself and starting a food blog. And it's like, none of your friends are probably starting a food blog, and they don't have the same questions or problems. And so the community element is a big one as well. And then this year we're going to start slowly adding in tools, like a nutrition label generator. So you can drop in your ingredients and then it creates a nutrition label for you. So that's yet to
come. Sounds fancy.
Yeah, pretty fancy.
You guys are messing around. I like it. Thanks so much for coming on the show, sharing all this stuff with the Side Hustle Nation listeners. Everybody, you got to check out Pinch of Yum, beautifully done site, and also Food Blogger Pro if you want to see how they've got that set up. You know, guys, we'll wrap up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
Cool. I can go first here. I think this is one that I've been thinking a lot about lately, and I think is really important. And I posted about this recently, and kind of that post has got me thinking about it more as more people have connected and resonated with the idea. But for me, the number one tip would be, I call it 1% infinity. So what does it look like to continually improve in really small percentages over time? And I can attribute a lot of the success to Pinch of Yum to not necessarily huge ideas that we implemented over a long period of time, but like really small things that we've done, like right before I've gone to bed. An example would be, I was thinking about starting Food Blogger Pro, and I said, you know what, I'm just going to email these developers that have done a membership site before and just see what they say about possibly building a site for Food Blogger Pro. And it was really that email that was the catalyst into Food Blogger Pro. And it was just that one little 1%, that it took a little bit of a mental jump, like, oh, I'd really love to go to bed right now, but I'm just going to shoot them an email real quick.
Okay. I really resonate with that too, just from the idea of, and I've never heard it expressed as, you know, this 1% infinity before, but like I have somebody once put it as like relentless incrementalism, and maybe that was in like Good to Great or something, but it's like, you know, everybody wants like the overnight success, the get rich quick thing, but it's like, this daily march, I'm just going to try and get a little bit better and then if you improve 1%, and I'm going to butcher the math on this, but over the course of 365 days, I know it's not 365, but it's like, it's a big percentage, It's awesome.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that another way that could show up is like, what does it look like if you have an issue, instead of just ignoring it, to see if you can just really quickly fix it. And that's another example of like that 1% infinity. So it can be like, learning something new, but I think it can also be repairing something that's broken that you otherwise would ignore. So that's mine. Lynn, do you have yours?
I think mine would just be to, I guess it's the same kind of thing where like you're talking about that one last push, kind of thing before you go to bed, just do that one last thing or whatever. But the work-life balance thing when you're doing more than one job is just really challenging. But I feel like the reason for, or what I attribute a lot of the success of Pinch of Yum to, is just a constant like saying, yes, I'm going to post. And now today, yes, I'm tired. And yes, I'm going to post. And now today, yes, I'm going to post. And so it's not never saying, no, I need a break. But it's most of the time saying, yes, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it again, and now I'm going to do it again. And just kind of that continued, consistency with whatever you're creating, whatever you're putting out there, doing that repeatedly and pushing yourself to be consistent, I guess. I always struggle with, sometimes I feel like I don't want to do it. And so I'll say, oh, well, that's the great thing, because now you have a blog and now you can say no and you can decide when you're going to post. But the reality is, the blog wouldn't have gotten to where it is if I would constantly be saying no. And so it's trying to say yes, 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 most of the time. And then also knowing when you need a break. Because you do need a break sometimes, and then to be okay to say no and get back up the next day and then say yes. So that's kind of the biggest takeaway.
Get it? That's a challenge, like figuring out how to get it done when you don't feel like getting it done.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys. And that's all I got. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Nick.
Great. Thank you.
This edition of The Side Hustle Show is brought to you by Alex Genadinic and Problemio.com. Alex, you may remember, was on the show way back in episode 3 talking about mobile app development, discovery, and monetization. Now, Alex is a fellow hustler who takes a systematic approach to helping his entrepreneurial clients and customers. In fact, earlier this year, he helped me identify a big opportunity to reach more listeners in iTunes by simply optimizing the show's title and description. And since then, downloads are up more than 20%, meaning 1 in 5 of you listening to this might not be hearing it if it wasn't for his work. Now, in addition to his business planning and marketing mobile apps, he's got a couple books written from his experience in consulting with over 1,000 entrepreneurs. Check them out at sidehustlenation.com/Alex. Now, this is one conversation that definitely got me pumped up about the possibilities and potentials of online business. I mean, what a cool success story. I'm excited for Bjork and Lindsay and the future of their food blogging empire. So, I mean, what do you think? Is their story something you can resonate with? I especially love the 1% infinity piece. Like those tiny improvements we can make each day compound over time and add up to some really, really big gains. Now, I experienced this myself when I tried a 30-day push-up challenge. And if you've seen me in person, I'm not very strong. But it was pretty simple. Like each day for a month, I did as many push-ups as I could. Each day trying just to beat the total from the day before. And I started off with like 27 or something, like a pretty not a very impressive total. But I ended the month at like in the 70s. It was nuts. If I had started off on day one trying to say, hey, I'm going to do 70 push-ups, like it would have been discouraging, impossible, and I wouldn't have even gotten started. But hey, by trying to just do one more or two more every single day, I got there. It was really, really cool to see. So those small incremental improvements are huge. I'll link to that in the show notes as well. So links and resources mentioned in this episode, go grab them at sidehustlenation.com/episode46. And that's it for the show. Until next time, go out there, make something happen, and I'll see you next week in episode 47. Hustle on.
Thanks for listening to The Side Hustle Show at www.sidehustlenation.com.